This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices. On tonight's program, we will have part one of a fascinating discussion about the meaning of sex and gender with Jenielle T. Jennifer Renee interviews Congressman Barney Frank. Alice McCarthy, Director of Community Relations at the Rothko Chapel, will talk about the religion lecture series, The Struggle for Truth, Voices from the Margins. We will be talking with the folks at Project Excite about their program for GLBT youth at Bering, and our friend Nancy Ford will join us to tell us about the latest adventures in her life as the new editor of The Houston Voice. But first, London and the BBC.
Former Yugoslav leader Slobodan Milosevic will be buried in his homeland, but without state honours. Mr. Milosevic died on Saturday in a prison in the Netherlands where he was facing war crimes charges at the International Tribunal. The Serbian president, Boris Tadic, said it was up to the family to decide where the funeral should be held, and while he would not act, Serbia's courts might grant them permission to return from exile. Speaking to reporters in Moscow, Mr. Milosevic's son, Marko, said it was obvious his father should be buried in Belgrade.
He was the head of Serbia, the head of Yugoslavia. There is nothing to discuss. His place is in the Yugoslav capital. This is what our family wants. It's what makes sense.
Thousands of protesters are marching towards Thailand's government house in Bangkok to demand the resignation of the Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra. They plan to surround the building ahead of a cabinet meeting, although Mr. Thaksin will be chairing the gathering by video link from the northeast of the country, where he's campaigning for the forthcoming election. Bangkok's entire police force has been mobilized for the march. Kylie Morris reports from the Thai capital.
It's a middle-class mutiny. Families and office workers, academics and state employees all calling for the removal of Thaksin Shinawatra. Camped in the Royal Park by the thousand, they've heard speeches from key organisers of the demonstrations. Thaksin's media rival Sonthi Limtongkun and the Prime Minister's former mentor and friend Chamlong Srimwang. Both have made it clear that the people shouldn't compromise, that the Prime Minister has put personal interest ahead of his duty to them.
Azerbaijan has reported three human deaths from bird flu. The cases, which have yet to be confirmed by the World Health Organization, will be the first fatalities in Azerbaijan, which found the deadly H5N1 strain of the virus in migratory bird flocks last month. The deputy health minister said the victims were from the same area on the Caspian Sea, coast south of the capital Baku. You're listening to the news from the BBC. President Bush has renewed allegations that Iranians are helping to arm militants in Iraq. Mr. Bush said there was no doubt they were assisting the insurgents to make bombs used in attacks on US-led forces. In a speech, he said that among the thousands of improvised bombs found in Iraq in recent months, some of the most powerful had components that clearly originated in Iran. Jonathan Beale reports from Washington.
President Bush's speech was primarily aimed at trying to arrest falling public support for his leadership over the war in Iraq. He acknowledged the conflicting images of violence and despair being seen every day. But President Bush did significantly step up his rhetoric against Iraq's neighbor. He accused Iran of being partly responsible for increasingly lethal attacks on coalition forces. President Bush said that such actions, along with Iran's support for terrorism and its pursuit of nuclear weapons, would continue to isolate Tehran and rally the rest of the world.
The British Defence Secretary John Reid has announced a 10% reduction in the level of British forces in Iraq. Around 800 troops are returning home, leaving about 7,000 there. In an address to the lower house of the British Parliament, Mr. Reid said the move would be completed by May. Scientists from the United States and China have managed to restore sight to hamsters blinded by nerve damage. The scientists said they found that a solution of biological molecules injected into the area of nerve damage helped repair the connection between the eye and the brain of the hamsters. The hope is the technique could be used in treating a wide range of neurological injuries. Here's our science correspondent, Roland Pease.
Nerve tissues, unlike skin, don't heal, so that someone paralyzed because of a spinal cord injury is nowadays unlikely to walk again. But in the past, scientists have found that severed nerve cells do have the ability to regrow. The problem is whether they can be encouraged to reconnect to make a continuous pathway back to the brain. Now researchers have developed a kind of biological scaffolding made out of protein-like molecules that seems to do the trick. The scaffolding forms spontaneously from a solution injected into the area of nerve damage. Dr. Rutledge Ellis-Benke, who led the research, says that nerves connecting the eye to the brain in experimental hamsters started to join again within 24 hours of the injection, and that tests proved that the animals were able to see again within weeks.
The Brazilian army has ended a 9-day occupation of slum district of Rio de Janeiro, during which it failed to recover weapons stolen from an army base. The operation of 1,500 troops, backed by helicopters and armored vehicles, led to frequent clashes with members of heavily armed drug gangs. 4 people were injured. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Welcome to tonight's program. It's Monday, March 13th. I'm Deborah Bell.
I'm Jennifer Renee.
I'm Greg Chapman.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And I just want to congratulate everyone that participated yesterday in the AIDS Walk 2006. It was a great day for the walk, and a lot of folks came out. And we had... I'm going to say his name wrong. I want to call him Sandy Rapp because I know someone named Sandy Rapp, but I think his name was Anthony Rapp, that was the grand marshal for the AIDS Walk, one of the stars of Rent, the musical, and the Gay Man's Chorus performed, and they have a concert coming up, and tonight we're going to play some selections from their CDs, and all the music tonight is dedicated to those that we've lost to AIDS, those living with AIDS, and the prayer for a cure. So we have a very exciting program. Jennifer, who are you going to be talking to?
We've got Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts is calling in tonight from Washington, D.C. Going to give him an opportunity. I met Barney at the Victory Fund brunch here several weeks ago and talked to him briefly, but he did the keynote speech at that. And so I am very excited about having him on the show tonight.
And then we're also going to have Amber Adams from Project Excite, which is one of the programs over at Bering that's for GLBT youth, and we're going learn about that program. And Greg, you have
Alice McCarthy, Director of Community Relations at the Rothko Chapel,
and they have an exciting series, their lecture series, and this Wednesday they're going to have a special program with 4 gay theologians talking about the impact of religion on our lives. And then Nancy Ford will be here for a little while to talk to us about her new position as editor of the Houston Voice. But first up, we have Janelle Tortorese. And Janelle, welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I know Janelle because we both attend the women's group at the First Unitarian Church every Sunday morning at 10:45. Not that we're both there every Sunday morning, but that's when the group meets. And Janelle did a presentation on the subject of sex and gender and what the differences are between the two. And Janelle, how do you come to have any expertise in this area?
Well, I finished my dissertation in biological anthropology in 2002 at Rutgers University, and my subject area dealt with gender identity and sexual orientation. And so in order to understand gender identity and sexual orientation, I have a very broad broad background in research of different gender identities and how they're related to or not related to sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. And so what is sex and how does it develop?
Okay, well...
You don't know.
Well, I know what sexual acts are and how...
Okay, just checking.
Okay, Jennifer, watch it. No. What is the term sex? What does that mean?
What is that term that they're asking for on the forms that say sex, male
right.
or female? Yeah.
Little box.
All right. Well, generally, sex can be thought of as the biological part of gender, if you will, a greater gender identity. And there are, from a biological point of view, there are several different levels to considering what someone's sex might be. And those include genetic, hormonal, gonadal, as far as, you know, testes versus ovaries, and morphological, what the appearance of the physical body is. And then behavioral is also something that is considered in part of as part of sex, but I would say that behavior is really more about gender than it is about sex.
So it's way beyond that little box that says M or F, and I think we're going to discover that there's not enough boxes.
No, there really isn't enough boxes. There's a great deal of variation out there. We like to think of sex as a binary category, male, female. It's that simple. Gender may get a little confused. You know, there are different gender identities. We can deal with that. But even sex, something that you would think would be so basic, is not. There are lots of things that can happen during development that affect development of either gonads, hormones, morphology, so on, so that even though individuals are mostly XX and mostly XY, not everyone is, though, you still can
explain
end up with...
Explain what XX mean and XY.
Okay, thank you. I forget sometimes what I need to explain and what I don't. So, females are born with two... Generally, females are born with two X chromosomes, and so the X chromosome is sort of thought of as the female chromosome, but males must have one as well, and males are generally XY. So they have one copy of the X chromosome. And the Y chromosome compared to the X chromosome is just this little tiny thing that basically has a couple of genes that signal for developing the testes and producing testosterone, and that's about it.
I have a theory about that, because, I mean, if you look, it really is shaped like an X. The chromosomes are mm-hmm. shaped like an X, and they're paired, and they're almost always about the same size and about the same shape all the way through the pairs. But when you get to the sex chromosome, for women, it's these two big, mighty X's. I am woman, hear me roar. And when you get to the males, there's this little X, and then there's just this little tiny inverted V shape. It's not even a Y. I don't know. I think it's a mutation. That's my theory, and I'm sticking with it. Because I love them. I have two sons, but... You know, they're mutations.
Yeah, but why?
Well, Janelle actually has some insight as to why. So sex is one thing. How is gender a different thing?
Okay, well, gender is more the sense or the feeling that someone has about who they are in relationship to the terms man versus woman. So for sex, you might use male and female, and of course that's not enough to cover everybody's sex, and likewise neither is man, woman enough to cover everybody's biological sex, to cover everybody's gender identity as well. That's usually the way that you feel about yourself, and of course it doesn't always match. Even if you have a clear-cut biological sex, your gender identity doesn't always match your biological or morphological sex, and it's common that it does, but it happens that it doesn't. So,
can there be other pairings besides XY or XX?
Yes, there can. There are a variety of different things that can happen. There can be some individuals are born with only one X chromosome and no second sex chromosome at all. And these individuals are female, and they do have some developmental problems, usually, and are infertile. Individuals can be born with three X's, which really isn't going to do... it doesn't change anything very much because
they're
the body...
They're not hyper-feminine?
No, they're not hyper-feminine because the body actually in every cell for a typical person who has two X chromosomes, in every cell of the body, one of the X chromosomes is inactivated. So when you have three X chromosomes, you just have two X chromosomes in every cell is inactivated. So you just have one remaining active X chromosome. So beyond having three X chromosomes, you can start to see some problems with infertility and some other things will occur. You can also have XXY, so you can have males that have two X chromosomes and one Y chromosome. As long as they have that one Y chromosome, they're going to, development proceeds along the usual path, then they're going to have that the male characteristics.
So is it to follow that transgendered individual are people that have these multiple chromosomes?
In some cases, not necessarily, though. There are, for the most part, men that are XXY or XYY. There's really very little.
I know
little
somebody that's XYZ. No.
They're generally going to be the variation within their range of behaviors and identifications is going to be the same as within the general population. You really won't see a big difference. It was thought for a while that males with two Y chromosomes were more violent because they found more of them in prison populations, but that ended up being more of a result of XYY males tend to be taller, and so they stand out more as far as, they get identified more often in crime. So it was sort of a strange little finding that popped up. So
where does brain chemistry come into this?
Okay, that's a very good question. The gonads differentiate at 7 weeks in utero, and the morphological genitalia is finished differentiating by 4 months, begins at about 2 months. The morphology of the brain is being developed the entire time throughout prenatal development, and it has a lot. The brain chemistry of what occurs during development, I think, can have a lot to do with one's later sexual orientation and gender identity. Not everything, but quite a bit to do with it. So that if the hormonal environment during certain critical periods of parts of the brain developing are affected with different levels of hormones than might occur for the usual pattern, then you'll end up with, with some variation in that gender identity or sexual orientation.
Well, she gets blamed for everything else.
Yeah.
I'll take the high cheekbones and the breasts anyway.
Well, I told my mother when I first came out to her as a lesbian that she said, "Well, is it my fault?" And I said, "Well, Mom, if it is your fault, thank you."
You mentioned that at 7 weeks the X chromosome kicks in. Is that what you were saying earlier? That my understanding is that that we all start out basically female, and there's a delay before the X chromosome kicks in.
Actually, the Y chromosome.
I mean, the Y. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I said it backwards.
That's okay. No. But most biologists refer to female as the default sex. I don't like that term very much.
I don't either.
I actually, and some feminist biologists, which I'm more aligned with, have come up with the term the female is the preferential sex. That's what's going to occur.
It is for
preferentially.
Me.
It is for me too. I just had to work at it.
It is the sort of preferential sex. It does take a couple. It takes those those little genes. There may not be much on the Y chromosome, but they tend to have a pretty powerful influence because at 7 weeks the genes on the Y chromosome that cause the cells to release a substance that's called testes determining factor, and once that substance is introduced to the placental environment, then the testes, or the undifferentiated gonads, then begin becoming testes as opposed to undifferentiated gonads.
Are these the hormones we're talking about?
Well, testes determining factor is not so much, it's a hormone, I guess you can call it a hormone, but it's really just sort of a substance. So,
but at 7 weeks in the developmental cycle, that's when the hormone wash takes place that triggers what's going to happen next?
Well, it's one of the places where it takes place, right? At 7 weeks, if development is proceeding along the typical pathway, then you're going to have testes determining factor produced, and the gonads are going to respond by beginning to develop into testes. But it also isn't quite that simple. The Y chromosome also needs to direct something called well, I don't know how complicated you want me to get into this, but Mullerian inhibiting substance, the female gonads, they're actually, the fetuses are exactly the same with two potential ducts, sets of ducts that can develop into either the male or the female gonads, the ovaries or the testes. And so for males to develop along the typical pathway, they both have to encourage the growth of the ducts that are the male that will become the testes, and also inhibit the growth of the ducts that would otherwise become female.
Where in the body are the gonads?
The gonads are typically in the lower part of the abdominal cavity.
Mm-hmm.
Although in males, those descend then into the scrotum.
So and ovaries are up above the uterus.
Right. But during development, they all start in that same general area. Although, of course, when you're talking about a seven-week-old, it's really hard to describe exactly where in the body those things are. So,
How big is the embryo at that time?
Too small to see.
So, very tiny.
Very tiny, yeah.
I don't know where I read this, but I read this somewhere that the reason men have nipples was because that development occurs before the X chromosome, the Y chromosome kicks in. So I thought that was really, really strange, because there's no genetic reason for men to have nipples. So it's really a female attribute.
Other than the theory that they might have been part of the creation for our pleasure, as a pleasure zone.
Right.
In humans. I'll buy that theory.
Yeah. I will too.
Male or female.
It works for me.
Yeah. So, how does gender identity develop?
Okay, well, the question that you asked before about brain chemistry sort of, I think, leads into that. One of the influences on gender identity does seem to be the hormonal environment prior to birth. So that if you've got, because not only at 7 weeks do you have a wash of hormones occurring, you have that wash of hormones, you've got different periods where you have different baths of hormones that the fetus is being exposed to. And depending on what those are made up of, you can, the brain develops in response to those things. So that's one level at which gender identity can begin to be laid down for some people. There are some studies that find some differences in brain structure and brain chemistry of individuals with varying gender identities.
I'm curious, X chromosomes, of course, can swap material. And Y's can't.
During recombination?
Yes. I was wondering if that had any influence, perhaps, on why you have, for instance, more men are gay than women are lesbian, or if that just totally doesn't have any influence at all.
It may have some influence. There are some researchers who talk about becoming that the process of becoming male is a very and being male really is a very risky and troublesome and difficult process, because the preferential development is female, and so in order to override that preferential development, you've really got to do some extra things. And so that just allows I don't want to use the wrong terminology here, so if I don't necessarily mean the way that this might sound, but if development doesn't occur as it normally does, there's more that can go wrong with males.
Right.
Because there's more that needs to happen, so there's more opportunity, just more probability that something can go wrong. So I think that's why you see more gay males and more transsexual or transgendered males. Although that's starting to change, as well as more researchers are paying attention to females and males, females and women. So,
And it could be also that the women are more hidden. That lesbians are, we're invisible is what it amounts
right.
to in some places. But that's changing, just like with the T's,
that's right.
Jennifer.
And also the trans men, the female to males, can hide within the lesbian community without ever, they can get all as butch as they want and get by with it without having to make any major changes.
Yeah. We've been talking to Janelle Tortorese about the difference between sex and gender, and she's going to join us again next week as we continue the discussion, and we're going to deal more into issues of how sexual orientation is related to sex and gender. Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices, Janelle.
Thank you.
Now we're going to go to This Way Out.
Thank you.
Thank you. programs get more dangerous as they target younger people.
We feel like we really need to raise the awareness that this is going on. Where's focus from the family? They can put $100,000 ad in national papers, full page, but they won't help the ministry that actually helps people change.
Religion provides no cover for adults who actively hurt young people.
What do you expect to see today?
A family and naked body.
It's fantastic. You're really fantastic.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Cameroon's outing publisher is jailed. A new ex-gay strategy puts youth in the crosshairs. And the world believes in Sydney's Mardi Gras. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 11, 2006. A tabloid newspaper publisher and two gay men have been jailed in Cameroon on the heels of several sensationalized tabloid reports collectively outing more than 300 well-known celebrities and government officials in that Central African country. Street vendors were forced to sell photocopies of the weekly tabloids, screaming such headlines as, "The queers are among us," after each paper's entire print run sold out within hours. Several thousand members of a group calling itself Free Youths gathered outside the court in the capital city of Yaoundé to condemn homosexuality at the start of a defamation trial in late February that pitted outed Government Minister for Parliamentary Affairs Grégoire Owana against two of the tabloids, L'Anecdote and Nouvelle Afrique. The trial concluded last week with L'Anecdote publisher Jean-Pierre Amagou Belinga being sentenced to 4 months in jail and ordered to pay a symbolic few cents to Owana for libeling him and the equivalent of about $2,000 in penalties to the state. He was also ordered to arrange for the judgment to be published in 15 local and international newspapers and on radio and television stations. Belinga had claimed to have unimpeachable documents to back up the list of alleged gays and lesbians whose names and photos he published. However, concluding the two-week trial, Judge Alexandre Amagou Anaba said Belinga had failed to produce any evidence to support having Owana on those lists. She also noted Cameroonian society's strong disapproval of homosexuality, which is also illegal there, punishable by up to 5 years in prison.
Two men were sentenced to one-year jail terms in Cameroon last week for having sex with each other, according to international news reports and human rights groups. In an unrelated but more publicized case, trial began in late February for eight men and a 17-year-old boy charged with homosexuality. They've all been in jail since last May following a raid on a gay nightclub in Yaoundé. Two other men arrested in the raid were released last week. A government prosecutor had ordered the detainees to undergo physical examinations to determine whether or not they'd had anal sex. Several human rights groups protested that order in a letter to Cameroon's Minister of Justice, and reportedly no such exams have taken place. Paula Edelbrick of the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission worries that a climate of public homophobia has emerged in Cameroon that causes great concern about the fate of the remaining detainees. Amnesty International has called them prisoners of conscience, and this week urged its global membership to petition Cameroon to release the nine detainees, expressing concern that they are being subjected to cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. A verdict in the case is expected to be issued next week.
Another international human rights group, Human Rights Watch, has condemned plans by the Netherlands to send asylum-seeking gay Iranians back to their home country. Dutch Immigration Minister Rita Verdonk this week announced an end to a six-month moratorium that had been imposed on deporting the refugees following the public hangings of two teens in Iran for alleged gay sex. According to Scott Long of Human Rights Watch's LGBT rights program, men and women suspected of homosexual conduct in Iran face the threat of execution. We have documented brutal floggings imposed by courts as punishment and torture and ill treatment, including sexual abuse in police custody. He added that Iran's criminal code makes sexual intercourse between men a crime punishable by death.
and that women who have sex with women face the same punishment. In a letter to the Dutch Parliament last month, Verdonk claimed that no Iranians had been executed for being homosexual, despite the reported hangings of those two teenagers who the Iranian government said were executed for raping an underage boy. For homosexual men and women, Verdonk wrote, it is not totally impossible to function in society, although they should be wary of coming out of the closet too openly. The issue has created controversy in the parliament, with the opposition calling for a full debate. Human Rights Watch says that the European Convention on Human Rights prohibits the Netherlands from deporting a person who may be at risk of torture, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment.
A unanimous U.S. Supreme Court ruling this week upheld the Solomon Amendment, which requires universities that accept federal funding to give military recruiters the same on-campus access that any other employers get. Several colleges' non-discrimination policies include opposition to the Pentagon's Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban on openly lesbian or gay military personnel. And some $300 million in federal funds for those colleges and universities were at stake. Recently confirmed Associate Justice Samuel Alito was not involved in the unanimous 8-0 ruling because he was not on the bench when the case was argued. Writing for the court, Chief Justice John Roberts dismissed First Amendment free speech arguments made by a coalition of several U.S. law schools, saying that Congress has the constitutional power to simply force schools to give access to military recruiters under its authority to raise and support armies. Both the Human Rights Campaign and the Service Members Legal Defense Network used the opportunity to urge Congress to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, while noting that the military ban itself was not at issue in the case. Roberts, in fact, mentioned homosexuality only in passing and never referred to the policy. A ruling is awaited in a lawsuit directly challenging Don't Ask, Don't Tell from a federal court in Boston.
Caught between the rock of a Vatican directive against placing adoptive children in gay and lesbian homes and the hard place of Massachusetts non-discrimination law, Boston Catholic Charities has decided to discontinue its adoption services altogether. The controversy began last November when it came to light that of the 720 special needs children placed by the agency since 1977, 13 had gone to same-gender parents. Boston's Archbishop Sean O'Malley received direct orders from the Vatican in December saying that Catholic agencies are prohibited from involvement in adoption by lesbian and gay couples. Those instructions were in keeping with a 2003 document they called same-gender adoptions gravely immoral in that they would actually mean doing violence to these children. However, the 42-member Catholic Charities Board voted overwhelmingly to stick with the state's law mandating equal treatment for gay and lesbian couples in spite of Rome's wishes. When Archbishop O'Malley and the other three diocesan bishops announced their intention to seek an exemption from the non-discrimination laws anyway, eight members of the board resigned in protest. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, a devout Mormon and a potential contender for the 2008 Republican presidential nomination, expressed his sympathy for the bishop's freedom of religion position, but determined he was powerless to provide an exemption by executive order. State legislative leaders also warned the bishops that they should not expect relief from them. That left a court battle the only option available to the Boston Archdiocese, which is already straining under a $93 million settlement for its nearly 1,000 sex abuse cases. Finally, church officials made the surprise announcement on March 10th that the agency would leave the adoption business rather than comply with the law.
But the story does not end in Boston. Another communique from Rome now has the Archdiocese of San Francisco reconsidering its adoption policies. This message came from San Francisco's former Archbishop William Levada, who replaced the former Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, as prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Levada admitted that three children had been placed with same-gender parents during his tenure in San Francisco, but now says that no bishop should allow adoptions by gays and lesbians.
On the other side of the Roman Catholic coin, 19 priests in the overwhelmingly Catholic Canadian province of Quebec have published a 1,000-word letter supporting same-gender marriage and the ordination of gay men. In their February 26th missive, the priests denounced the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops' opposition to same-gender marriage before Parliament last year. The letter asked, "Was there any trace of the compassion that marked Jesus' passage on earth?" and went on to declare, "There is not a paragraph, not a sentence in your brief that takes into account the historical discrimination against homosexuals and the tragedy of their social and ecclesial exclusion. The priest's stand is thought to represent the broadest open protest of Vatican policies in Canada since the 1968 encyclical that ruled artificial contraception immoral. And finally, all they wanted to do was dialogue, but they were arrested instead. The Equality Ride, organized by the non-denominational religious group Soul Force, is inspired by the U.S. Civil Rights Freedom Rides of the 1950s and 60s. Activists are busing across the country to about 15 colleges and universities that ban enrollment by openly queer students. However, despite an uneventful similar visit last year to Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, Chancellor and founder Reverend Jerry Falwell warned the bus riders in advance not to set foot on his campus. "The parents of our students have entrusted their sons and daughters to our care," he said in a statement. "Liberty has an obligation to these parents not to expose their children to a media circus that might present immorality in a positive light." Some 60 people, including 35 equality riders, gathered for a late morning rally on a sidewalk outside the school's main entrance on March 10th, their first stop on the tour. But when they attempted to move onto the campus to speak with students, more than 20 of them were arrested and led away in handcuffs for trespassing. Two face additional charges of inciting to trespass. Soul Force member Jacob Reitan told reporters that, "We wanted to come to the school today to say, learn from history. We have a right to question and to show how we are children of God," although apparently not at the oxymoronically named Liberty University. That's News Wrap for the week ending March 11th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. News Wrap was written this week by Lucia Chappelle and Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm John Beaupre.
Clap your hands if you believe in Mardi Gras. We'll take you to Sydney, Australia for one of the world's most popular parties later in the program.
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday.
Last year, Tennessee teenager Zach Stark's parents forced him into a resident therapy program called Love in Action to supposedly cure him of his homosexuality. Zach's story, which was highlighted on this program and championed on the internet, raised awareness about the renewed threat to young queers that is the subject of a study released earlier this month by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute. Its author, Jason Cianciato, outlines the concerns that led to his report, called Youth in the Crosshairs, the Third Wave of Ex-Gay Ministries.
More recently, there was also some media coverage of another youth, 17-year-old DJ Butler, who was brought to Love in Action's program in handcuffs by his father and told by the counselor there that if he tried to leave the program, they would call the police and he'd be taken to a juvenile detention center. So we wanted to see what was going on with this. Was it an anomaly, or is this really part of a broader movement among ex-gay programs to focus on youth?
Well-known commentator Wayne Besson, who wrote Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth, says these groups, facilities, and associated conferences, like Focus on the Family's Love Won Out, are motivated more by cash than conversion.
If you load any one of these conferences, there's just an incredible amount of products being sold for one. The Focus on the Family is going around the country promoting this. It's a big part of what they do, and they make a lot of money. This is crucial to their anti-gay campaign, and in fundraising letters and in appeals, this is a big part of it. But we know by the ministries themselves that they're not getting money to support the ministries, the actual process and groups that help, supposedly help people change. For example, Alan Chambers, the leader of Exodus International, sent out a newsletter saying he was going to have to sell his house and give up adopting a child to support Exodus International. Where's Focus on the Family? They can put $100,000, you know, dollar ad or $75,000 ad in national papers, full page, but they won't help the ministry that actually helps people change. And there's a reason for this. If Focus on the Family thought they had a panacea, if they thought there was a real cure and people were going from gay to straight, they would pump a lot of money into the actual ministries, and they're not doing this.
Haley Gorenberg is the Deputy Legal Director at Lambda Legal. She believes a wide variety of avenues can be explored to shut down unethical so-called treatment programs.
These programs get more dangerous as they target younger people who have fewer rights and resources to actually defend themselves. And in many cases, they mislead distressed or misguided parents into enrolling their children in bogus programs that damage their health, and as this report points out, can lead to trauma and even suicide. Now, for more than 30 years, Lambda Legal has worked nationally on achieving full civil rights for LGBT people and people with HIV through the legal cases we select and through education and public policy work. And in our legal advocacy and our cases, Lambda Legal puts special emphasis on protecting the rights of young people. And we want to help victims of so-called ex-gay or reparative therapy providers and to prevent more harm to young people in the future. Often, since these types of programs are so steeped in religion, many of them, we'll hear the question about, you know, a sort of religious defense or don't these programs have a religious protection to do what they seek to do? And I would say to that, you know, I'm a big fan of the First Amendment. I truly am. But religion provides no cover for adults who actively hurt young people. We at Lambda Legal, you know, want to talk to young people and to families who have been through these kinds of experiences, and we have a toll-free number that we instituted to make our services fully available, including to young people who might not otherwise be able to reach us, which is 1-800-LGBT-TEEN. And we've tried to get that around, make sure that folks know that that's a way to reach us toll-free.
National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Executive Director Matt Foreman explains why his organization, in partnership with Lambda Legal, is turning the spotlight on this issue.
Awareness needs to be raised. I think that many people would be shocked to hear about the story of the 5-year-old sent to conversion therapy, but just as they were shocked, and there was a lot of attention drawn to the story of Zach Stark and, to a lesser extent, DJ Butler. And so we feel like we really need to raise the awareness that this is going on, how and why it's going on, what its political connections are, and what people can do to protect themselves and protect their families.
That was Matt Foreman of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. His organization, in association with Lambda Legal, has just issued a report called Youth in the Crosshairs, the Third Wave of Ex-Gay Ministries. You can find more online at www.thetaskforce.org or lambdalegal.org. And Lambda's toll-free hotline number, again, is 1-800-LGBT-TEEN. For This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. The 28th annual Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras drew more than 300,000 revelers to the Gay Golden Mile, Sydney, Australia's Oxford Street, on the warm, balmy late summer's evening of March 4th. This year's parade theme was I Believe, and whether you believe in equal rights, a more human world, the power of love, or as one float proclaimed, I Believe in Fairies, it was an event filled with diversity, humor, and color. Marching men and women and political floats mixed with drag Egyptian goddesses in blue sequined outfits alongside surf lifesavers, not to mention the ethnic and religious contingents. Sydney's Lesbian and Gay Youth Refuge took on a Harry Potter theme, and lots of cowboys were in evidence as the Brokeback Mormons sent up the banning of that iconic film in Salt Lake City last year. To cap the festivities, openly gay singer Jimmy Somerville was a special guest at the post-parade party. This Way Out correspondent Barry McKay gathered reactions from some of the huge number of international visitors, both queer and not, along the parade route.
Hello, where are you from?
The U.S.
Yes. Is it your first time here at Mardi Gras?
Yes.
What do you expect to see today?
I don't know. Apparently a naked body. I think I'll be surprised.
Traditionally, the parade is always headed up by the bare-chested dykes on bikes.
Where are you from?
Lithuania.
Lithuania?
Yeah. Europe. Yeah, Russia. Yeah.
What do you think of Mardi Gras?
Colorful. Yeah.
You're a lesbian?
No. Yes. Half.
Why?
Bisexual. Sometimes.
I'm from Cornwall.
I'm a lesbian.
Where's that?
In England.
Yeah. And you're a lesbian?
Yes. Yeah. Lesbian.
You enjoying Mardi Gras?
It's awesome. It's fantastic. I love it.
First time here?
Yeah, first time here. I absolutely love it. It's awesome. I've never been to anything like this before. Yeah, hang on. Mom, I'm a lesbian and I'm proud of it.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Really fantastic.
I'm from Singapore.
Yeah? Are you enjoying yourself?
I am.
You got it?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Did you have a parade like this back at home?
No, we don't. It's illegal to be gay there.
Hi, where are you from?
From Africa.
Yeah, which country?
I'm from Tanzania.
Yeah?
Tanzania.
Are you gay?
No, we are bisexuals.
Yes? What's it like to be gay in Tanzania?
Just not the same like this.
Yeah?
But still existing.
Thank you. Where are you from?
Italy.
What do you think about Mardi Gras?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Everything is fantastic. Gorgeous.
Hi, where are you from?
El Salvador.
El Salvador. Is it your first time here?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And I really enjoy it. It's happy and very multicultural.
Yeah?
Yes.
Are you gay?
Yes.
Yes? Would you have a parade like this back at home?
No.
No?
No. This is why it's, for me, it's fashion and I really like it.
You're from India?
India.
Yeah. It's your first time here at Mardi Gras?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. People have come from all around the world, so we thought that it would be something good.
And something different which we haven't seen before.
You have something like this in India?
No, oh, not at all.
No.
But it's fun. It's fun to be at this place at this time.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's really fun.
Okay. India is still not that broad-minded.
Where are you from?
South Korea.
Are you gay?
Yes, I'm gay.
How are you enjoying it?
Oh, it was really fun and lots of people are very proud of their sexuality.
What's it like to be gay in Korea?
Even if it's like times goes on, people are getting open to the gay community, but we still scared to the out, it's people, yeah.
You don't have a parade like this at home?
No. But if I have time, if I have chance, I really want to parade this in the future.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Yes, yes.
Where are you from?
Venezuela.
Yeah?
Yes.
Is it your first time at Mardi Gras?
Second.
Yeah. Are you gay?
Yep.
What's it like to be gay in Venezuela?
Well, it's a really hard situation for everyone, for the gay population, because you're very discriminated.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It's not like in here.
Would you like something like this back home?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but it won't be possible, I think.
Why not?
Society, the macho ideals is still up. So, yeah. So if you're not the ideal man, so then you're nothing. You see what I mean?
As well as international tourists, Sydney has one much-loved drag queen who herself is from overseas.
Sorry, I'm Claudeline. How are you, darling?
Yes, where are you from?
I'm actually from Australia, from Sydney, but we're working for French television tonight.
You have a beautiful accent.
Thank you, darling. Thank you.
Are you enjoying Mardi Gras?
Wunderbar.
Yes. What is it like to be gay in Egypt?
Is there gay in Egypt?
What?
No!
Do you have gays in Egypt?
Yeah, but not in the street, just in the houses.
Yes?
Inside, not outside.
Would you like to have a parade like this?
No.
Why not?
No. That's difficult, too difficult. Yeah.
Where are you from?
Hong Kong.
Do you like Mardi Gras?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You have something like this in Hong Kong?
Not really. They're really traditional and they don't really like to, you know, we're not there to come out to show us that we are gay.
We're from China.
Yes,
yeah, and it's their first time to come to see the man.
Mardi Gras. It's quite an experience, I think.
What do you like most about Mardi Gras?
It's to see the freedom of Australia. It's really free.
You wouldn't have a parade like this in China?
No, it's just, no, we can't.
What's it like to be gay in China?
No, it's the discrimination. People do not talk about gays.
Some of the indigenous people from Australia and New Zealand were also seeing the parade for the first time.
Where are you from?
Wairua, New Zealand.
Are you gay?
No, seriously not, but I think the way that they express themselves is, like, you know, hey, you know, whatever they do is cool.
Yep.
But after seeing this parade, you know, it's a good thing for them, bro.
Your first Mardi Gras?
Yeah.
Oh! You gay?
Yes, and mate. Laughing, yeah, loving it. Yeah, are you?
Yes, totally.
Oh, can you kiss him? Kiss.
What's your Aboriginal heritage?
Mate, well, we're from the Darug tribe. We absolutely love to bang and stack.
We had a good night tonight. It was lovely.
It was beautiful.
First Mardi Gras.
And we just want to go home and stack. Would you like to join us?
No.
Are you sure? You know what time it is? It's stack time.
The Howard government in Australia is still following a very conservative line with queer rights. A lot of politically themed marching groups filled out the parade route.
We have a bloke here that is saying all around the world there are countries that are not only legally recognising same-sex marriages, but the social recognition that flows from it. We are sick and tired in Australia of seeing our relationships seen as not valid, and the Howard government has a lot to answer for. Homophobic violence is on the increase, not just in Oxford Street, but you look at the rate of youth suicide. Quite frankly, it is sickening and it is disgusting, and it's time for Howard to go.
Where are you from?
London.
Yeah? Is it your first Mardi Gras?
My first. His second.
Yeah? You gay?
Yes.
Yeah? How are you enjoying it?
Fabulous.
Yeah?
Brilliant.
How does it compare to home?
100 times better.
So what's it like to be gay in the UK?
It's okay. We've got the same marriage now. It is brilliant. Over the past 10 years, it's improved tremendously.
But not everyone, it seems, enjoyed the spectacle.
Where are you from?
Iran.
Are you gay?
No.
Did you enjoy it today?
No.
You didn't enjoy it?
No.
What didn't you like about it?
It's funny.
It's funny?
Yeah.
But you didn't like it?
No.
Adult.
Good.
Well, perhaps the answer reflects the official government line in Iran more than anything else. From Sydney, Australia, at the 28th annual Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, I'm Barry Mackay for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Barry McKay contributed program material. David Brown sang Teen Freak, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038 USA. For associate producer Lucia Trapella and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WGDR Plainfield, Vermont, Radio Free Santa Cruz, California, 3CR Fitzroy, Victoria, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. Coming up Tuesday, March 28th at Jones Hall in downtown Houston, the Gay Men's Chorus is going to be presenting 70s Fever, Time to Boogie Baby. And here's some music from that.
Need an angel, you know. It's something I can't quite explain. But something is there, alive in the air, like the way the wind feels before it starts to rain. When you meet an angel, you smile. You can't help the way your heart glows. Although you just met and you don't know him, when there's laughter in an angel's eyes, and since laughter is the language of God, it isn't that odd to hear him laughing. When you love an angel, you live, accepting the gift of each day. You're fully aware that his presence is rare, and that nothing on earth can make your angel stay. When you lose an
I'm Greg Chapman, and I'm happy to have with us tonight Alice McCarthy, Director of Community Relations with the Rothko Chapel. How are you doing tonight?
Very well, thank you.
And it's my understanding y'all are in the midst of a series of discussions, lectures.
Yes, we are. We're having a number of them, have been having them all year long. The one that we're having on Wednesday is called The Struggle for Truth, Voices from the Margins.
You're going to have a panelist of four gay and lesbian theologians.
Yes, this is a historic first for Houston. They're interracial, interfaith, gay and lesbian theologians talking about religion.
Wow, that sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's a first.
What's their background? What can you tell us about the theologians?
They have some impressive academic credentials. Irene Monroe graduated from Wellesley and is a Ford Foundation Fellow, where she's finishing her dissertation at Harvard right now. She was a head teaching fellow for Reverend Peter Gomes, who's written the good book, which a number of gay and lesbians will probably know about. She is presently a professor of religion and director of multicultural and spiritual programming at Pine Manor College. She also writes and has a news weekly called The Religion Fang.
I really like that.
I did too. And she has an online column, Queer Take, for The Witness, which is an Episcopal publication. Mark Jordan is the chair of the Department of Religion at Emory, and he received his PhD at the University of Texas in Austin. So
he's a homeboy.
He's a homeboy. He has written a lot. His academic interests circle around religious identities and Christian teachings on sex, that sort of thing. And his books include, among other things, The Silence of Sodom, Homosexuality in Modern Catholicism, and The Ethics of Sex. And he's also written on same-sex marriage, so he's particularly timely. Robert Goss got his Ph.D. in comparative religion at Harvard also, and was ordained a Jesuit priest, but he left the priesthood and is now a senior theologian at Metropolitan Community Church in North Hollywood, California. He's written a great deal, too. He's written Jesus Acted Up, and Queering Christ Beyond Jesus Acted Up. And for that one, he was a Lambda Literary finalist. And for, Acted Up, he won the 2000 Templeton Prize in Religion and Science. He also started ACT UP in St. Louis before he moved to California. Gabriel Blau is a very young man. He's an author and an activist, and started the God and Sexuality Conference at Bard College in New York. He must be really quite remarkable because he looks like he's just barely 23 or so.
And he's Jewish?
He's Jewish, yeah. The other three are Christians. And our moderator, Dr. Jeffrey Kripal, is the Newton Razor Chair holder in religious studies at Rice. He's been a wonderful help. He received his PhD from the University of Chicago.
You are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, Texas, and we're talking with Alice McCarthy, Director of Community Relations from the Rothko Chapel. So you're talking about the moderator.
Yes, Jeff. Jeff is also an author. He particularly specializes in Eastern religions, and his book that is going to be coming out is Esalen, America and the Religion of No Religion, which is an interesting title.
What I find interesting about these theologians is that they seem to have stayed within the system.
Yes, that is interesting, because they clearly are aware of the marginalizing and want to reform their churches from within.
That's a big issue for many people in the GLBT community, is how do they create their spiritual life, a spiritual community, in a wider community that is often hostile.
I think very much so, yeah.
And these men and women have basically decided to stay in the system and try to change it from within.
Yes. I have a lot of respect for that, because I'm sure that they had to deal with a great deal of pain. I know some of the things that I've heard happen to Dr. Goss were really quite awful. I mean, severe harassment. And yet their faith was strong enough that they felt there was reason to stay within them, even though they may have been a little fluid, because Bob Goss did leave Catholicism, formal Catholicism, and went into the Metropolitan Community Church.
Right.
How was this panel put together, Alice?
Jeffrey Kripal helped me a lot with it, because he knows people. He has spoken on a couple of occasions at the God and Sexuality Conference, so I had a long list of people to choose from, and then I read some of the works and wrote to these people and asked them if they would be interested in participating, and they were really wonderfully receptive, yeah.
So you were actually instrumental in the creation of this particular event.
Yes.
So you have a lot of passion, I would think.
I certainly do. Very
well,
much.
I've known that for many years.
Yeah. But I do have a great deal of interest in the success of this. I think that this is something that speaks to all of us in Houston, and it's something that we need to all hear. I mean, both lesbian, gay, transgender, straight, bisexual, all of us need to be able to talk to each other about issues that we feel deeply for and about beliefs that we hold.
Now, before we forget, this discussion is going to be March 15th.
That's right, Wednesday.
7:30.
The Ides of March.
The Ides of March.
Alice saw me at Carol Wyatt's Christmas party, and she said, "Remember the Ides of March." I said, "What? Is this a warning? I have to watch out." So it's gonna. Now, and then she said, "Well, that because we're gonna have this fabulous program at Rothko," and so it stuck in my mind.
That's
and, you know,
good.
I followed
That's
up and got
good,
in touch
Deb.
With her.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's going to be at the chapel, which is located where?
The chapel is at 1409 Sol Ross at UPON. That's very near the University of St. Thomas, and it's four blocks west of Montrose, one block south of West Alabama.
And there's no admission?
There's no admission, and there's a reception.
Reception afterwards.
Yeah.
Where can they, if they want to get some information on it, what's the website?
The website is www.rothkochapel.org, O-R-G. And Rothko is spelled R-O-T-H-K-O. And then chapel, C-H-A-P-E-L.
And that's at 7 p.m.
7:30.
Okay. Oh, well, it was an era here. 7:30. And speaking of Rothko, that leads us into explaining what the Rothko Chapel itself is.
The Rothko Chapel is an interesting place. It's unique in the world, actually. It houses 16 paintings by Mark Rothko, the American abstract minimalist. And it has two vocations, really. It's to provide an intimate sanctuary for worship to people of all faiths. It's not affiliated with one faith or another. And the other vocation is to be committed to social justice and human rights. So this particular program fits very neatly into both of those vocations.
Mm-hmm. And there is a lovely sculpture there with a reflecting pool and a park area. Well, I know a lot of people go there and just sit and meditate and,
yes.
and enjoy the good weather. And it's right next to the Manil Museum. So if people are familiar with that, that can kind of help them locate. Are there parking issues?
Well, you can park on the street, of course, and also you can park in the Manil Collection parking lot, which is on West Alabama at Mulberry, basically, between mm-hmm. Mandel and Mulberry.
The Rothko Chapel was maybe the first place in Houston that allowed for there to be memorials for people who had died of AIDS.
No other church or no other house of worship in Houston would allow that.
Now, are there regular services there?
Not really, although the Magdalene community has been meeting there at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings.
And then you also have a series. Is it once a month you have a different meditation?
Yes. Yes, and there's actually going to be a meditation on Wednesday at noon, so Wednesday is a busy day there.
And they're different disciplines.
Yes, we've had Catholics, we've had Jews, we've had Sikhs, we've had Buddhists, we will have a Muslim.
Any whirling dervish?
No, we've had whirling dervishes there,
yeah.
But not in this meditation series.
So this Wednesday is going to be Buddhist, you said?
No.
She has to refer to her notes. I couldn't remember. I remember reading about it and thinking, oh, that sounded good.
This Wednesday is a Protestant.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And
yes, Protestants do meditate.
And that's at what time?
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. The meditations are all at noon.
And people can just show up and
yeah.
And
how long do they last?
An hour.
An hour?
So from 12 to 1.
How long have you been working with the Rothko Chapel?
5 years this month.
Wow.
Yeah. And working to get this program on for almost that long.
I'm curious, just personally, has there been any point in your life when you yourself realized that you were perhaps a voice in the margins?
Oh, yes. I definitely felt marginalized when women feminism became a big thing in the later 60s and early 70s. I felt very strongly that the church was not a safe place for me to be, or certainly not one that enhanced me as a human being. And I'd been very active in my church up till that point, and I wrote a formal letter of resignation and didn't go back to church again for maybe 20 years. And then re-involve myself and joined a church, oh, I guess about 4 years ago. I joined First Unitarian Church here.
Do you think that the elevation of Gene Robinson as bishop in New Hampshire for the Episcopal Diocese has helped fuel the discussion about the place for GLBT people in the community, or do you think it was maybe too soon?
Oh, I think it's wonderful that it happened, and certainly it fueled the discussion. I mean, people are talking about it a great deal and feel very strongly one way or another about it. But I think that it's important and good to have things like that happen that do generate discussion. And I hope, in fact, that this particular program will do just that, will put people together in a safe place where they can listen to, in this case, the gay and lesbian side, and then talk about it. And there are churches in Houston that are starting to do that now within their congregation.
Thank you for being with us on Queer Voices, Alice. And once again, tell us the time, place, and the name of the event.
It will be Wednesday, this Wednesday, the 15th, at 7:30 at the Rothko Chapel, 1409 Sol Ross at UPON. And you can call 713-524-9839 for information, or look online at www.rothkochapel.org.
Great. I think it's a wonderful series, and I hope our listeners can make it if they have the time available.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Solstice Lullaby by Luke Parkin from the album Winter Journal. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Deborah Bell in the studio again with Amber Adams. Amber, you are with Project Excite, and that's part of the Bering Support Network, is that correct?
That's correct.
And what is your role there? You just sit around and cause excitement.
Indeed. I'm one of the four co-facilitators of Project Excite. And what we do is we're a really realistic approach to helping GLBT and queer youth find a place to connect and meet people. So we have kids anywhere from 14 to 19 that come and visit with us.
And how do they find the program?
We have flyers out at various places around town. We're doing this tonight. We have a website, which can I give that to you
sure.
right now? It's www.projectexcite.org, and that's spelled X-C-I-T-E.
Is there any particular reason it's spelled that way?
Because, no.
Because they thought it would be clever.
Yeah, quite.
Excite. And how did this project develop? How did it come about?
You know, it originally started out as a government grant to work with kids on drug awareness, specifically methamphetamines. But since then, it's transitioned into something much more. Now it's a conversation group for kids, and they bring in, it's collaboratively run, so the kids choose the topics, choose the agenda, and basically run the show.
Mm-hmm. And these are kids that identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered.
Correct. Or their supporters.
Are their supporters.
Right.
Uh-huh. So sometimes people come, they bring their friends and...
Yeah, we currently have a gay straight alliance sponsor teacher
mm-hmm.
coming to the meeting also.
Mm-hmm. And there must be a lot of work involved in making it feel like a safe place for the kids to come and for them to be open about what's going on with their lives, especially not just the sexual orientation part, but the fact that it's a big scary world out there in so many ways, and especially at that age.
Especially at this age when you're already...
with drugs.
Right. And there's so many transitions you're already going through as an adolescent, and this is just one more. So who do you find that's safe and, you know, isn't going to necessarily out you to the wrong people or... whatever. One of the ways that we make it a lot safer is face-to-face contact. So we'll go out and we'll speak with gay straight alliances in schools and let the kids know that we're around. Also, through word of mouth, other kids tell their friends. Mm-hmm. And I find that's helpful. Also, we have a MySpace account, which I had no idea about until I started facilitating this group, but it's quite popular.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's so nice.
So word of mouth is one of the main ways people find out about the program. And
right.
what do you think attracts them to it?
I think partially the fact that the kids are the ones running the show is a big attracting factor. Also, it's held on a weeknight, which can be sometimes more convenient. We have some kids that walk over from their school to come for meetings. And then also just the activities that we have planned, the things we do are intriguing for them.
And about how many kids are involved in the program?
Right now, I think we have less than 20,
mm-hmm.
so it's just barely getting started.
Mm-hmm. And what is your? Are you a social worker or
my credentials? Let's see. I am a marriage and family therapist associate, which means I have my license. I still need to get the 3,000 hours.
Uh huh. So you're working on it,
right?
Right. Right.
We also have another. Another marriage and family therapist. We're both working on our doctorates. And then we have a couple of other people who have a lot of experience with gay student alliances and all kinds of activism.
What drew you to work with this population?
Well, I think my own experience is partially in high school of knowing that I was attracted to both women and men at the time and not feeling like there was a safe space to talk about it. I mean, even with myself, really. And mm-hmm. I know my school didn't have a GSA, so... I would really like for there to be a space for kids to do that, especially with the trends today where kids are coming out younger and younger.
Mm-hmm.
There's really mm-hmm. a need for that. There used to be, 100 in 1987, 100 GSAs in the States. Now there's 3,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a growing need.
So what is the space like where they gather? Is it like just a meeting place with all the chairs set up or...
We're
environment?
We're over at Baring in the Montrose area, and it's upstairs in a choir room, actually. So it's pretty cozy, and we sit around a long table and have discussions that way. It's very friendly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's lots of good programs there at Baring. How is this different from Hatch?
Well, there's just such a need in Houston. Houston is one of the, fourth largest cities in the states that, I mean, the more resources for gay kids these days, the better. I guess one of the differences would be that we meet on a weeknight. I don't know, one of our strengths is that it's a collaboratively run group where the kids are pretty much in charge of setting the agenda.
Mm-hmm. And what weeknight is that?
It's Tuesday nights at 6:30, and we go anywhere from 7:30 to 8:30, just depending on the topic and the interest.
Mm-hmm. And do you bring in different people to speak?
We do. Often the kids have their own topics they want to discuss. We talked about coming out a few weeks ago and, you know, where are you out and what that experience was like. We've talked about, some of the kids want to talk about, can you be gay or queer and be spiritual? And how do you hold both of those things in your life? So we've
ties
got...
in well with our previous interview.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
So we're bringing in Marilyn Meeker Williams from Baring to speak with them on that topic.
Mm-hmm.
We've had other speakers before. We've got Emily. Oh, and I'm blanking on her name. There you go. Emily Langdon coming in actually tomorrow and speaking with the kids about how to become more politically active in your neighborhood, in your community.
That's what I say. Get them while they're young. Recruit them while they're young to be
political. Start those habits early.
Yes. And, well, because, you know, there's this younger generation that's coming along who have such an opportunity to get it mm-hmm. and then do something with it.
Right.
That a lot of people, I mean, they can already be accepting of themselves and of each other
right.
and then go on and be activists without having to go through all the trauma and turmoil that a lot of us did.
Yeah, to have that security, that experience.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Greg knows from experience, and each of us in our own way. I came out as an adult, so my experience was probably somewhat different. A lot of people mm-hmm. worry as they're coming out about telling their parents, and I had to worry about telling my kids.
Do you understand that?
Yeah. And so what has been some of the things that have been, I know you can't give names and give, you know, specifics, but some of the types of things that have come up in the group that maybe have been breakthroughs or that have made a difference in, you know, making the connections among the young people. Have you had some real success stories or?
I think one of the biggest challenges for some of the kids in our group is parental support. We're finding that the kids in their schools are often just nonchalant about it, just kind of shrug it off when they come out to their friends, which isn't always the case, but seems like harassment is down. Some of the numbers are pointing to that. But parents are still having a hard time. You know, why do you have to be gay? It's a choice. Why can't you mm-hmm. try to be straight for a while?
So, how do the kids come into the program if they don't have the parental permission or...
Mm-hmm. Some of the kids just walk over from their high schools, you know, and it's at a church and it's a youth group, so it is in some ways easy to say I'm going over to a youth group. Some of the kids have been kicked out of their homes, mm-hmm. so they're coming here from a supportive friend's house, which makes it, I guess, sadly in some ways easier for them.
Mm-hmm. And are they given resource information about, like, some of the programs that are available and some of the things that are going on that might connect them with resources? And
yes, absolutely. We have our own events. We had a Valentine's Day not so straight from the heart party. Whether you had a Valentine or not, we just recently participated in the AIDS walk on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then we provide them with any other information they're wanting to have around the community.
What, do they get any emotional support? Yeah, you know, I mean, is there any organized or unstructured way that they can get the support that they need at an emotional level for what?
Are you talking about peer support or mentor support?
Peer support.
Okay.
And mentor support.
Yeah, they get a lot of mentor support from the facilitators, especially when they're talking about difficult topics. You know, we're able to host ways for them to have those conversations with the other kids. But from the kids, they get a lot of support. Just the way that they talk about things.
Do they have like discussion circles where it's just them talking to each other?
No, it's all of us sitting around the table together. Now, after the group, they often go to Starbucks or some local coffee house, right, and they go and have their own discussions. Yeah. And I don't know what they're saying. I'd love to know.
Do you want to be the fly on the wall?
Well, I bet they make some good friends that way, and that's a really important thing.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the points.
Have there been kids that have actually been doing drugs?
We've talked about that a little bit, and there are some kids involved in AA and NA. So, yes, they do bring those voices to the group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
And that's probably helpful for those who haven't done it and maybe help them understand why they shouldn't do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you point them away toward, when a child is a throwaway, do you point them in the direction of where they can find help?
Yes, we make those resources available to them, and you know, if they don't already have support from friends, then try to push them in a direction of a shelter or starting to find ways to talk to their friends about getting support from them.
Well, Amber, would you tell us how people can connect with Project Excite?
Yes, our phone number is 713-526-1017, extension 223. And then there's the website, which is projectexcite.org. The other way is to show up. We're at 1440 Herald Street. We're upstairs in Bering in the choir room.
Well, thank you so much, Amber Adams, for being on Queer Voices.
Thanks.
Chorus of Houston, and that's from their album Mosaic, the purpose being to highlight the fact that they are going to be at Jones Hall Tuesday, March 28th, that's towards the end of this month, Jones Hall at 615 Louisiana, downtown in Houston. This is Queer Voices.
We will be having an interview, we hope, with Congressman Barney Frank, but, you know, those Washington, D.C. functions sometimes do go on, and so we'll be waiting for him to call in for that interview. But lucky for us, we have the ever-lovely Nancy Ford.
Oh, you're so kind.
And she has surprised us with her latest, newest adventures, you know, the continuing saga of Nancy Ford. We, at one time, were talking about how there had been a demise of the publication that you work for, and you were wondering if you were going to be, you know, standing on the corner of Montrose and Westheimer with a little cup and like that.
I've often stood on the corner of Montrose and Westheimer, but seldom with a cup.
Yes,
and certainly not a little.
That's
one.
Another story.
Now you get to do it with a paper.
But. And
yes, it's an exciting time. It's an exciting time. You've probably heard I just took accepted the position of the new editor of the Houston Voice, and I'm very excited.
Following in my footsteps.
That's right. Well, your footsteps are kind of snowed over there for a while. You were there in like 93, I think.
95.
95,
96,
yeah.
The formidable, for a short time.
Formidable,
but it was under
footsteps.
Different management.
Formidable footsteps to fill.
Why I didn't stay longer. So, the Houston Voice is part of the Blade, Washington Blade.
The Window Media. Conglomerate. They are the largest, I guess we could say, holder of the gay press, largest gay publisher in the country, possibly the world. Is that true? Ed Alvarez is here with me, our sales director for Houston.
Yeah, I think that the Window Media is the largest gay-owned company that, as far as publications nationwide, they own 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very large. It's a very, very large company.
Okay, so I knew about the Southern Voice and the Blade. Is there still a New York Blade?
There's a New York Blade. There's HX, which is also in New York. There's the Southern Voice, which is in Atlanta, 411, David, Washington Blade, South Florida News, and the Houston
And our very own
voice.
Houston Voice.
Yeah. And Genre. Maybe.
And Genre, correct.
Oh,
so two national publications, actually, HX and Genre.
And the Houston Voice has gone through different incarnations over the years. It was, I think, called the Houston Star or the Montrose Star at one time.
At the very beginning.
It was the Montrose Voice.
When Henry McClurg started it, 26 years ago, I was a bit of pup.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I believe it was called the Montrose Star, and as you said, it has had a number of incarnations, and I'm just very happy to be with them. The staff there is wonderful. Ed and I worked together with TXT Magazine, which closed, as you know, in December, and we were both happy to be able to ply our wares.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited to be working with her again. We worked together for a year, and our rapport is just incredible, and I really...
Who's on first, Ed? Never mind. You let me down.
It was a little trick there.
It was great to be offered a job with Window Media like the day after I was laid off with TXT, and my first order of business was to bring Nancy on board.
Oh.
Because I knew that she would be a great asset to the company.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, they beat me to the punch.
He's my pimp, is what he's saying.
It sounded kind of like that.
Pimp my dyke.
I think that's one of your upcoming What a World.
That could easily be.
Yeah.
And as you know, I have worked at a number, in fact, shall we say, let's go ahead and call it all of the gay publications here in Houston. Some of them are still with us, some of them are not. And people, you know, kind of kid me about that. It's like, well, you're finally at the Houston Voice. It was a matter of time, you know. But
did
I
you ever
like
do
to
anything with TWT?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
I sure did. I did some What a Worlds for them for a time being. I did some photos for them, photography. But I like to think of my gay journalism career
as a vast and varied banquet.
Oh, that's lovely.
I do, and with various courses all to the meal. Some have kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. Others have just been
savory.
But now, the final course, as far as Houston-based publication goes, the Houston Voice. So, of course, save the dessert for last.
Oh, the best for I always say eat dessert first because life is so uncertain. But
well, there you go. I'm willing to wait.
Well, speaking of desserts, what are some of the things that you see? I know you get a lot of stuff from the connections of Window Media and the national level of things that come in.
Yeah, that's definitely an advantage. We get the whole scope of what's going on all over the country and are able to adapt it to the Houston market. That's one of the things we're really going to concentrate on. And also, just to bring the local flavor up to a level that, the folks are satisfied with, our readers are satisfied with, and would also informs them the most.
Mm-hmm.
Was that innocuous enough? Was that?
Ed is. You can't hear him. He's nodding.
She's right on target. I mean, we had lunch with the executive editor last week or 2 weeks ago when
Chris
he was
Crane.
Here. And we sat down and we had a long talk, and you know, they're very supportive in the fact that they're willing to allow us to change the paper to accommodate the community, which is really what they've needed to do. It's been very difficult to run a paper from DC to, you know, for the community here. So we're very excited that they're giving us a lot of leeway to make the changes that need to be made.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Is there anything in particular that you want to see done that hasn't been there, or
I call it the triple L effect. And lift the level of local.
Uh-huh. Which was when I was the editor, that was kind of my whole thing, was that our community is so much made of volunteers and people out doing things and different organizations that make the community be what it is. And by golly, I felt like they needed to have an advocate. And so I always took caution to do that, to make sure that they were highlighted. And a lot of times people contribute, and if you don't show that it's appreciated by using it, you know, you're left with a whole bunch of national stuff that we can get lots of other places and not very much about what's really going on at the heart of the community.
I understand what you're saying, and that's why we try to enrich our national stories with that local flavor as well, to kind of give us the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, see.
And Ed, your job is to go out and sell the ads that make the paper possible.
Yeah, that's part of it, actually. The other part is kind of like the PR aspect of it, which I really, really enjoy. One of the things that we've been doing with the Voice since we came on board is really try to get it involved in more community activities. You know, we're sponsoring HRC, we're sponsoring the Pride event, we're sponsoring
The AIDS Walk, just yesterday.
Bunnies on the Bayou, the BCBC Boys. We're really trying to get involved with the community. And fortunately, you know, like Nancy, I haven't been involved as long as Nancy has.
Me old? What are you just...
Not mature.
That's even worse.
I have like a little bit of a rapport. It's not as extensive as Nancy does, but I have worked with people in the community, and over the course of the years, I've developed some sense of trust with them. And so making the transition to The Voice was very natural. When TXT closed, a lot of people actually approached me and said, where are you going to? Mm-hmm. And they actually said, if you're going to The Voice, we will follow you.
That's great. Aren't you also involved in the chamber?
Correct. I'm on the board. On the board of the GLBT Chamber of Commerce.
Uh-huh. And so that would have been kind of tricky to hold that role, but not have a job.
Yeah, I mean, we moved over. The membership just moved over very naturally, so it's a challenge to be in part of the chamber and do what I'm doing to balance both of them and be objective, but I'm trying the best that I can.
Well, and he is the best salesperson, in addition to his PR skills and just being a heck of a guy. Wonderful salesperson, because
Now she's buttering me up.
Uh-huh. Because
she wants something later.
Because he's I don't know if I should say currently or formally, a Mormon. And I just think that's wonderful the way you say you're just so used to not accepting no.
I used to be a Mormon missionary. And so being a Mormon missionary, you get used
I'm trying to visualize you in the white shirt with the little
bike,
tie.
With my bike.
See, my car wants to run over those people, and I know it's bad and wrong, but... anyway.
It's great, though. It's helped me a great deal because I'm used to rejection, so if somebody rejects me, I just keep going.
Uh-huh.
So it's something that was actually very useful for me.
I just think that's great. I think that's hysterical. I had to share it with you. I hope you don't hate me for that.
No, not at all.
What do you think are some of the benefits of businesses advertising in a publication like The Voice? I mean, it doesn't have to be a business that's owned by someone that's GLB or T.
Right.
But there's a market there, and...
I'll tell you what the advantages for people, businesses that are not GLBT related. Number one, it's a conservative paper.
Let's be careful with that word.
It's somewhat conservative.
It's conservative compared to,
for example, the publication that we worked for previously, which was TXT News Magazine. It was a difficult sell simply because it had too much flesh in it.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses like Wells Fargo or Washington Mutual.
Which is ironic because that was a switch from what it had been at one time.
Exactly.
The Voice had that reputation, and the Triangle, which was the precursor to TXT, had no... So it's something that we always have to work
past
with.
The sorbet.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, there you go.
Well, and so those companies find The Voice very, very attractive for advertising because it is somewhat conservative. It's a weekly publication. It is the only weekly publication in Houston now because of the
exclusively
format.
Exclusively serving the GLBT community.
Exactly. Exclusively serving the community.
Mm-hmm.
The format is very attractive for mainstream advertisers in national corporations, et cetera. So, I think that we have a great recipe for success. The fact that we have the support of the community, the format of the paper, changes are coming. Thank you to Nancy.
Well, and like I said, we have a really good staff, too.
Which is a very useful
Excuse
thing
me,
to have,
so
because having been an editor, if you don't have a supportive
exactly.
staff, a hardworking staff, and good writers, then that kind of leaves you floundering
exactly.
or having to carry the load.
And Johnny Hooks is certainly still with us. He's going to be continuing his Houston Voice on the Go-Go, or Hovo on the Go-Go, or Hot, I can never remember. Hot GG. Just get that article out. That's
all crazy stuff.
It's wonderful. I love his column.
It's fun.
Eric Irvin is also going to be staying with Window Media, and he is transferring to Atlanta to work with the Southern Voice, which I think is a wonderful boon to the company and to The Voice and everything. I find him to be an excellent writer and really enjoyed getting to know him in these last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're very excited for you, Nancy, to be at The Voice. I do expect it to be a much better publication than we've had in a while, because I know where your heart is and what you'll be bringing to it. If people do want to advertise,
or if they, you know, certainly advertise, but when you have something you need to tell us,
uh-huh.
you know, if you want to send us a press release or make us aware of something going on in your neighborhood that you think the folks need to know about, by all means, give us a call at 713-529-8490, or just drop me a line, nford@houstonvoice.com. How easy is that? nford@houstonvoice.com.
And there is a website.
There is a website, houstonvoice.com.
And are there criteria for how people should send in press releases?
Whenever someone asks me that, I just always tell them to follow the tried and true who, what, when, where, why.
And how much.
And how much. Well, you know. And anything that you would want people to know about the event, just include that, or as much as you can, and by all means a contact telephone number and you know, return email address.
Mm. Should it be in a special form or software use, or just any kind of word processing?
You are making this much harder than it has to be.
Well,
just send me an email.
She's
crying out loud.
She's way easier than I was.
Come on. No, I appreciate you. I appreciate you asking that. The easier, the simpler, the better. I'm not real tech savvy as I'm coming to know real quickly. But just a micro, what do you call it? Micro flesh word attachment. I don't know what you call it. Just send me a note.
Probably a plain text within the body of the email would be best, because if you send it as an attachment,
they're a geek.
Yeah, I am.
Really?
You know I am. Well, the thing about attachments is that they have those nasty viruses. So I always tell people,
you don't want to catch a cold on my way home from Ohio. I was in Ohio between now and the last time I saw you. I was in Ohio.
Got one of those Ohio colds.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah. Well, whenever people send attachments, I always say, send me the information in the body of the email and send the attachment, but tell me what that, that way I know what's in that attachment. Don't just say,
they got it. Let's move on. I got other stuff going on.
Because I know that you're involved in two things coming up.
Read the list of questions I prepared for you.
What's new, number one, and two, do you have anything else you want to add, Nancy Ford?
Well, I'm trying to make it simple on you, Deborah. Simple is good. No, there are two things that I'm involved with right now I wanted to tell everybody about. The first one is on April Fool's Day, which is April
no
Fool's.
Fooling.
No fooling. It's the most, appropriate thing in the world. Hey, by the way, where's Barney Frank?
Speaking of that, we don't know where he is, as a matter of fact.
Horrible segue.
He's in D.C.
D.C., and he had a function, and I called the two numbers I had and couldn't find him.
May not call before the show is over, but if he doesn't call,
he'll probably
call
5 minutes after the show.
The Houston Pride Band on April 1st presents Music and Laughter, the Universal Languages. It's going to be at Resurrection MCC over there on 11th Street, and guess who the MC and narrator is?
Okay.
Ellen DeGeneres?
Let me think.
Aim high.
Nancy Ford.
It would be me. I can't wait. I have never worked with the Houston Pride Band before. I've seen some of their concerts. It is so entertaining. I just love them to death. They're the hometown band. Y'all come out and see us.
They played over by the fountain and on Allen Parkway for all the people in the AIDS walk.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. And
I didn't know that. That should have been in the local paper, Ed. What happened?
Did you send out a reporter?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was there.
Their concerts are fun, and they welcome anyone who's interested in playing to join them.
Yeah.
You don't have to have played in recent years. Maybe the last time you played was in high school, but they'll take you at whatever level.
Talent is preferred, but not required criteria, yes. But it's at Resurrection MCC on April 1st, starts at 7 o'clock. It's only $10. And for tickets, you can call 832-265-3346.
And we will be having some folks from the band on March 27th to talk about that concert.
Good.
And then what else might Nancy Ford be
doing?
I'm
on the Kindred Spirit Celebration Committee. See, I took on these other activities when I wasn't working.
Uh-huh.
And just said, can keep my foot in the community. So now it's both feet and up to the shoulders again. But that's just fine because it's what I do.
Yes. It's who she
is. It's a vast and varied banquet. On April 29th, Kindred Spirit Celebration. We know what that is. It's the fifth annual celebration of the former gay women's bar that Marion Coleman and some folks started back in the 80s. It was just a one what?
Well, I was... She's like, I'm making a face here, so she's reacting to my making a face.
Did y'all all see that face?
I wouldn't have called it just a women's bar.
I was women and their friends.
Yeah, but it was pretty mixed before it was all over with.
Well, that's very, very true. In fact, that was the tagline for a place for women and their friends. Right. You're absolutely... I thought something crawled over your feet or something.
I actually love the original Kindred Spirits, and it was part of my coming out experience.
Yeah, really?
I spent like a whole weekend there, Valentine's weekend. They had many performers and it was packed and it was a lovely place. And so as I do. So many other people have fond memories of Kindred Spirits. And
oh, yes.
Cherry Wolf, who used to do
DJ?
Breakthrough program on the... on here,
yes,
on
yes,
KPFT, was a DJ there, and
was
a good friend of mine. So, yeah.
Yes.
I want to know more about it.
Oh.
So what happens at this celebration?
Yeah, what happens there?
At the event, it's like, absolutely, everyone should come, bring their friends of all generations. It's 21 and up, obviously, but it's a fundraiser. It's a fundraising dance. There will be a silent auction. There will be a raffle. There is, did I say dancing? Of course there's dancing.
Yes,
and a DJ, Terry from Bocados is traditionally the DJ. She's going to be there again.
I went to the dance last year, and mm-hmm. what I liked about it was they played the music like they used to play at Kindred Spirits. It wasn't like all this new wild stuff. It was my kind
of
music.
Oh, this crazy stuff
yeah,
the kids
know,
play
kids
now that's not
days.
Music. I'm just kidding.
Now, what
kidding.
Happens if
Eminem.
You don't have any friends and you're alone?
It's a good place to meet people.
Really?
Could well, maybe. I don't know.
Lucky.
I don't even know everybody. So
yeah,
everybody
knows her. And
not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah.
Oh. It's 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. April 29th. That's probably, yeah, that's the last Saturday in April. And it's real easy. For more information, ksreunions@aol.com.
That is great.
Oh, and it benefits a bunch of organizations, too. And I don't have that list, but it's a bunch of good ones. So.
Yeah. So
there you go.
There you go.
What else do you need? What else do you need?
And so what do you do on the committee to I mean,
I'm as a matter of fact, I'm in charge of publicity.
Oh.
So.
Oh. The PR.
I'm bringing the
committee
cupcakes.
Chair for the Kindred Spirit.
So I've done my job there.
So are you going to come back
birds.
Next week and give us a what a world, what a world?
No, I hadn't planned on
no.
it. Hadn't planned
we
on it.
We talked about
you.
It. We
that's
talked
news
about
to
it.
Me.
You're on the schedule.
Oh, well, then I guess I'll be here.
You better come back next
seems
week.
Like I was supposed to be doing something.
Because one of the
week.
Things that
know.
You committed to when you didn't had all that free time was that you wanted to, you know, do a regular feature on Queer Voices. So, you know. Yeah.
Before you had a job.
I'm here regularly, at least once a month. What
now,
else do you
we
want?
Really would like for you to come back next week
you.
If you possibly can.
It's nice
and,
to be asked.
And remind them that you are a comic on top of the fact that you do all these other things, all these volunteer things and good for the community things and being the editor of the Houston Voice.
Have you gotten the notice about my canonization yet? Because I have not seen that yet.
I
have
missed
you?
That email.
I seem to have missed that. I don't know. My poems are getting a little moist.
They're not
I don't
part
know
of
what.
Give me that phone. Let me call.
Was
the
it
phone.
Sent as an attachment?
Yeah, it was sent as an attachment. That's why I got.
Don't
locked.
Talk to me of tech. Don't do it.
It
to
is
me.
So great to have people come into the office, and she'll come out and say, "Hi, I'm Nancy Ford," and they'll always say. The Nancy Ford?
And then they'll say, I have a summons for you.
I just chuckle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's done wonders for my career, I'll tell you what.
Well, we really appreciate you being with us tonight on Queer Voices and substituting a large part for Congressman Frank, because apparently he's not going to be able to call in tonight. And good luck at the Houston Voice.
Thank you.
And we will have Nancy on again. I think we're going to go to a little piece of music now. No, Glenn says we're not
no,
going to go to
we're
a
not.
Piece of music.
Run the video.
Yeah. Play the tape.
Play the PSA. Go ahead.
There you go.
Well, I guess we can talk about a couple of other things, Jennifer. I think you have an event in April.
Yes.
That you're involved in.
Yes. It's the Houston Transgendered Unity Banquet. It's at the West Chase Hilton, 9999 Westheimer, and it's on April 15th. Good old tax day. Of course, it happens to be a Saturday. And you can get tickets to it. It's the largest and longest running transgender GLBT banquet in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, we should be proud of that. And you can get tickets. You can pay for them at this site itself at www.HoustonTransgenderUnity.org. Also, you can get it on ticketweb.com, mm-hmm. too, if you need to.
And the whole idea about the Unity Committee is for all aspects of the community, whether you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or an ally, to come together and kind of celebrate and to work towards better understanding and acceptance of each other.
Early in the aspects of the banquet in those early years, it was strictly for transgenders, just as many of the gay and lesbian functions or banquets were about just gays and lesbians. But it was formed and to broaden the community, to invite people from the GLB community into the banquet, and now it's become a real nice place to go and dance. There's good entertainment, and the food is excellent. This year we'll have prime rib. Yes, prime rib.
Anyway, we'll have a full menu.
Just make sure there's
dessert.
If you're a veggie, you can
you'll be accommodated.
Yes, you will. Even if you're one of the extreme vegetarians. No, we have green food also for that. And all you need to do is when you buy your ticket, there's a place where you can say that you're vegetarian, and we'll make sure that we have enough for you and to what extent you need to.
Mm-hmm. Well, make sure you don't fill up your dance card, so you got to save one for me.
Oh, absolutely not. One last thing. We do have a scholarship fund. The proceeds from after everything's paid for goes into the scholarship fund, and this year we'll be awarding two scholarships to this will be the first year that the scholarship fund we've had enough money actually to donate to give it to students so they can go to school.
You want to wrap up and do your thank yous?
Sure. Many thanks to Alice McCarthy from the Rothko Chapel about the program that's going to be taking place 7:30 Wednesday at the Rothko Chapel.
And Amber Adams from Project Excite. Terrific program.
And Janelle Reese, who will return next week to continue our discussion of sex and gender. Next week, we'll be having Greg Chapman talking with the folks at Family Pride.
And Team Houston will tell us about what they are doing to prepare for the upcoming games in Chicago and how you can get involved in participating.
And Keith Claiborne, an assistant to director James Knapp of the Bayou City Performing Arts, will tell us how we can get that boogie fever at their concert on March 28th. And maybe, or maybe not, Nancy Ford will join us with her comments about what a world, what a world.
And I can assure you, I will figure out a way to call Barney Frank this week, and we'll see when we can schedule him on at another time.
Thanks for listening to Queer Voices.
Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KPFT.
KPFT show Access This has won the prestigious Barbara Jordan Media Award for excellence.
In 1982, the Governor's Committee began its tradition of recognizing the communicators for accurately and progressively portraying people with disabilities. At the suggestion of many in the media, the awards were named for the late Barbara Jordan, one of Texas' most distinguished citizens and foremost spokespersons for the rights of all people.
Each year, the committee honors a select group of communicators in the fields of print, radio, photojournalism, television, advertising, public relations, and other areas increasing public understanding of both the problems and potentials of individuals with disabilities.
Congratulations to Scotty McClymans and crew for this great award. You can tune in to Access This every Sunday at 7 p.m. right after The Monitor.
This is KPFT Houston.
Late night music programming features some of the most adventurous sounds on Houston radio.
At midnight, check out any of these shows.
On Monday mornings, Zydeco Pasole.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.